podcast you are currently listening to is called Bad Play Style, in which we all play the same video game and then talk about it, during the course of which we will swear a ton and probably spoil every single aspect of the video game.
One, two, three, ready. Welcome to Bad Playstyle. My name is Matt.
I'm Keenan.
Hey, it's me, your friend Owen.
I always feel like I'm blindsiding you guys with that thing, but
The problem is
Hades.
I don't know if I go next or he goes next and we don't communicate it.
And we don't want to talk at the same time.
Right.
Okay. I love that even more. But anyway, moving on, this is Bad Playstyle. This is the podcast where we all play the same game and then talk about it. This time we played Hades, which I'm extremely excited to talk about. And before we can talk about that, we got to talk about what things we've been playing later. I want to go second. Keenan, you go first.
Okay. So, I have been playing a lot of my various normal games, but the thing that is notable here is I jumped into Destiny 2 because the new stuff that is going on in it is super weird and interesting. To sort of give you some context, the last expansion was all about going to the moon and fighting in this big red fortress that showed up overnight. The bad guys,
ask a question? Do they specify where on the moon it is?
Yeah, there's like some landmarks and shit, but like the thing about Destiny that you'd hate is that everything's all fucked up.
But like, do they say like what crater or what part of the moon or anything like that?
There's a couple, of those that I recognize. But then, like, there's weird deep fissures in the moon because of all the shit they've done on the moon. And, like, part of the moon is busted open on the bottom. Like,
okay, but where's this red fortress on the moon, though?
I don't remember.
In, like, the Sea of Clouds? Or, like, what's up?
I don't specifically remember. I can look it up. Okay. But, so they build this big red fortress on the moon, and that expansion was spent, like, figuring out why the hell it's there and what's going on. And you eventually fight to the bottom of it, and find out that there is, like, in stasis, this pyramid ship down there. And it's, like, it's a big three-pointed pyramid that flies around in space, but this one's, like, damaged and stuck here. And when you go inside it, it talks at you and says spooky things about the darkness, because the darkness is bad.
Hold on, I'm going to stop you again for a second.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is a three-pointed pyramid?
So it's not a four-cornered, it's three-cornered.
It's not a pyramid, it's a tetrahedron.
Sure. Yeah.
Those are different shapes.
Everyone refers to them as the pyramids, so that's like a thing.
Everyone is dumb as hell.
Destiny.
Pyramids have four triangular faces and one square face on the underside.
Boctangle.
Yeah.
So yeah, this thing is on top of that thing, and it turns out that thing is like a busted-ass version of a bunch of these things that have showed up, and they're here and like threatening the white orb that gives everyone powers, and they're threatening a bunch of planets, and one of the quests in the lead up to the new expansion is, yo, we need to evac these planets because they're probably getting blown up, which is them telegraphing that they're tired of having these areas in the game and they're going to put new areas in and have to get rid of these.
Oh, I heard that they're moving towards this model of like putting like levels and content in the Disney vault, basically.
Yeah,
like occasionally bringing stuff out.
So the idea is that, like, from what I understand, is the idea is that one of these planets will rotate into existence at a time, mm-hmm. so that you can still go get the gear and play the quests there.
That is a really good solution to the old WoW problem of running the same five dungeons over and over and over.
Yeah,
again.
Right.
From the perspective of the developer, that's a really good solution.
I think any like long standing like co-op shooter like this needs to have that. Like, do you remember like a couple weeks ago when we booted up Payday 2 that one time, and there's like fucking 50 missions in that game now?
Yeah,
like it actually, I think it needs to have a pared down library that rotates or something.
There's like a choice overload problem that hits there, right?
Totally.
So yeah, like Destiny is doing weird cool lore shit in game and not just in their like weird side loaded lore manifesto. and it's really cool, and it seems like they're setting up like a player versus player sort of dark versus light thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought back one of my favorite side characters, and she's like the main quest giver in all this stuff. So it's very cool.
All right, stack rank me your top five favorite Destiny characters. Who's number five?
Who's number five? Probably Shax, the guy that runs PvP.
Okay, that's his defining characteristic. He's a PvP.
He has a
terminal.
Horned helmet. He's the announcer in PvP, and he gives you things for playing PvP. Yes.
Oh man, the Warframe guy who gives out PvP also has a big hat.
Yep.
All right, Keenan, what's number four?
I don't know if I can fill out five.
You heard it here first, folks. There's not even five characters in Destiny.
I think your ghost is pretty fun overall. The robot that gives you your superpowers and talks at you and hacks things.
We don't actually care. Owen made his point.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
One of my
favorite ones is dead. So
yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, you and everybody else.
Is that the Nathan Fillion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, spoilers for two expansions ago, guys.
Hey, so are you good?
Yeah, that's the only like notable thing.
Okay. I want to talk about a cultural event that is happening on, I think, this Discord, which is, just small tangent before I get into this. Did you guys know that 343 Guilty Spark is, like, a caveman?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I did.
I learned about that.
I recently watched, what is it? Is the guy
Unraveled?
From Polygon? No, Brian Gilbert's.
Yeah, Unraveled. That's what it's called.
Okay, yeah, where he just read all of the Halo novels and then tried to summarize them in a 29-minute long video.
Everyone should go watch that video.
It's
really
a very
good
video.
Yeah. But anyway, Owen and I have been playing co-op through the original Halo. With the plan of playing through all of them eventually. And in the Master Chief Collection, you can hit tab at any time to cycle between the old graphics and the new graphics. And what was the way that you characterized the new graphics? Because every time we hit tab, Owen and I just go, like that gif of the two guys screaming at the computer, like, ew, gross, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, we almost universally dislike it. It's that it feels like... So it replaces all the textures, right? But I don't think it replaces the models. Or no, it does. It does sometimes. But it feels like all the textures were made like individually without any holistic vision of how they would look together. And it feels like there was also like this mandate of like, you need to make sure that people who are playing this understand that they have received a lot of value by getting this remaster. So like everything has to be busier.
Yeah, like well, and like trying to tie the old Halo into the new Halo aesthetic that exists, right? Like,
I don't think it's even that consistent with the new Halo aesthetic.
Yeah, they really didn't. That's not what's happening.
And like basically, like, you know, like Halo 1, and I'm sure that like a big part of this has to do with the fact that it came out on the original Xbox, and so like the system, the hardware behind it just wasn't as strong as computers and consoles are today. So like a lot of Halo 1's aesthetic is like this undetailed simple blocks of metal, like huge, making up buildings in it,
and like in rooms that are so big they have fog.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right. And everything's really smooth and like,
yeah, yeah.
So it's like, but it's like
rather... What if all that metal had grooves on it? Just like lots of grooves.
And they all glow.
And all the fog is gone, and that's better.
Well, it's like someone looked at the requirements of like how rooms needed to be built and how hallways needed to be built to hide loading screens and things like that, and came up with diegetic reasons for these things to be the way that they are.
So I'm looking at screenshots, and the screenshot
like
where he comes out of the tube is terrifying. How much there's texture on everything. Like, yeah,
I was in the middle of a sentence.
I'm
Jesus.
Sorry.
It's like someone said, like, there was coherent art direction, and there was coherent, like, trying to find reasons why things were the way they were that made sense for the universe and the way things are constructed. But then with the new one, it was just like you took a dude fresh out of DigiPen and said, make a kick-ass wall texture. And that was like the extent of the direction they were given. At least that's what it feels like to me.
Well, and also it's like, it's the thing I was saying before. It's like, so this version of Halo 1 we're playing is from the remastered version they put out a few years ago, right? And if you want to convince an audience to buy Halo 1 again, and you're selling them on the premise that, like, we made it look better, like, basically, you can't just make, like, a nicer block of unfeatured steel in the map. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I can sort of, like, the more I think about it, the more you can sort of see how they got here. Where it's like, well, obviously the people who are buying this remaster, we need to show, like, they need to feel like they got a good value out of it, right? But so much of Halo 1's aesthetic is smartly designed around the limitations of its hardware.
Right. Right, and then all of this just looks busy. Like,
yeah. It's way too busy. I'm interested to see how this feeling carries over when we start playing Halo 2. Viewers, we will report, but...
Yeah. Yeah, this is probably going to be like an ongoing, like, beep, 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 beep. The Halo Minute is coming in. Non-console gamers are weighing in on a fucking 15-year-old shooter.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what I
want. Is that pistol still really good in that remake?
What's that?
Is that pistol still really good in the Halo 1 remake?
Yeah, actually, you know, like, if you can aim with a mouse, that thing is, like, fucking incredible.
That thing, yeah. Like, I had friends back in the day who hated sniper rifles and used that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
so, to be completely honest with you, a lot of weapons are buoyed up by the fact that we're mouse aiming. Like,
the
assault rifle is a lot better with mouse
aiming. Oh, I believe it. Also,
because you're not playing on a console, it at the same time feels awful to use, because it's just like the dumbest SMG, basically.
Right.
Like, it's like this kind of low damage, huge spray cone. There's no way to even, like, tap to accurately fire with it. Like, there's no hack.
Right. That's not built in. Not the intention.
Yeah, it's basically like it's a very low damage full auto shotgun.
Uh-huh.
I'm very interested in using the battle rifle again. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
The thing with the Halo 1 assault rifle was you rode the trigger on the way in and then slapped someone, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, I suspect I'll probably like the battle rifle a lot better than I did back in the day when Halo 2 came out, like, because I'll actually be able to aim for shit with it.
Right. All right. Well, I think.
And then besides that, I've been playing just an absolute shitload of Hades. But Owen, do you got anything else you want to talk about?
I've been playing a couple things. Okay. For reasons I couldn't fully articulate or understand, to quote Carl Sagan, purchased and played through the main story of Fallout 3.
Yeah.
I've recently been watching through Range Touch's playthrough of Fallout 1 and 2, which I found interesting, and really... It made me realize, like, for Fallout 1 and 2, I think I'm a little too close to those games to be, like, very critical of them. That, like, watching two other people who don't have the same warmth and romance for Fallout 1 and 2 have a lot of, like, very legitimate, like, points they bring up. They're not grievances, but, like, their criticism of that game, not all of it positive, I think is very valid. And it's stuff where, like, I never noticed the things they're talking about just because, like, I was so young when I played those games, and they live so deep in my person that, like, I'm too close to them to be this critical to them, I feel like. And so after I finished watching their series about Fallout 1 and 2, it made me feel like, well, what if, like, I don't like Fallout 3, and I'm not going to go into that too much, but I don't like it for, like, myriad reasons. But it made me realize, like, maybe I've been too harsh on it. Like, maybe similar to the way in which Fallout 1 and 2 are rougher than I'd like to believe or rougher than I'd like to think, maybe Fallout 3 has redeeming value. And so I bought it. I started playing it. With the potential of it being a podcast episode of doing Fallout 3. Since we did Fallout 1 and 2 and we did New Vegas, like, it makes sense that we do Fallout 3 at some point. That we do an ongoing Fallout series, as I used to say so much. We're not going to do that. Fallout 3 is exactly as stupid as I fucking remembered it. the game, like, I
feel like I remember Fallout 3, like, contributing very little.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that it just kind of fucks off in a corner and does its own thing. Like,
it's fucking bird food, man.
And yeah, nothing's earned. It's like going to see a cover band. They just take all the same ingredients and mash them around in a different way. It's like, you know, it's like turning one Taco Bell menu item into another. It's just all the same shit just mushed up in a heap. The main quest, granted, I only played the main quest, which is probably the worst way to play Fallout 3 is to just play the main quest. But yeah, this shit's fucked up. Also, like at the, so spoilers for Fallout 3, by the way, if you're worried about the learning about the story of like a 12-year-old game, like, I don't know, shove your pinkies in your
I mean, ears. We're going to spoil a not even out yet game. Like,
yeah. So at the end of Fallout 3, when it's time to activate Project Purity, you have the opportunity, or you can give it to someone else, to go switch the thing on and receive a lethal dose of radiation and die, unless you own the DLC, and then you'll survive. And the thing that people always love to poke fun at is the fact that many people, when you reach this, have a follower who's literally immune to radiation, and you can't say to that follower, hey, dude, can you go in there and just do it for me, since you'll be fine?
Well, like, can't you actually have, you can ask him to go in there and he goes, I don't want to rob you of your destiny.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God. That's
yeah,
even
yeah,
worse.
Then he suddenly like develops this like this weird notion of like personal destiny and death and stuff like that. So this is like an old joke about Fallout 3 is that you can have Fox with you or you can have Charon the Ghoul with you and they will not go in there for you. And they could just do it. And it would be a trivial matter for them. But instead, you have to either give your life or you have to order the Brotherhood of Steel Paladin to go in there for you and have her give her life, which is what I did, by the way. But when I did this, the game glitched out and Fox the Super Mutant glitched into the door as it's closing. So he's in the irradiated room with the Brotherhood of Steel Paladin just watching her die from the radiation instead of doing anything to help her. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah, that game is stupid and it made me feel stupid for thinking I would get something new out of playing it again.
How's Moira doing?
I didn't do her quest.
Oh, okay.
I'm not interested. She can fuck off. She can fuck off and go away.
All right.
And I bought this game called Thousand Threads. I haven't put much time into it yet. We might do it for a podcast. I kind of like what it's putting down so far, but I've only spent like maybe 15 minutes playing with it, just kind of fucking around with it. It's a post-apocalyptic, so instead of playing the post-apocalyptic open world game that I bought that's new, I instead replayed the old one that I hate because I don't know, I'm a fucking moron. So I bought this game called Thousand Threads and it's a open world post-apocalyptic game, but it's not like a super gritty violent post-apocalypse, but it's like it's people just sort of scrounging to survive in like a weird, non-super civilized setting.
Okay.
And so it's all just about you just, like, kind of chilling in, like, nice nature. And, like, at the very beginning of the game, I think you are a postman or something like that. And so it's about you, like, traveling between settlements to, like, deliver letters and stuff like that. It's really neat. It's got this like really simple like voxely art style, but like the landscapes in it are just gorgeous.
Cool. Yeah, it looks really pretty.
Yeah, and it's not like centered on like violence or combat. There's like a bit of crafting and like you can get into like fights with like dogs and shit and like there are weapons and guns in the game, but it is not a game about collecting guns and duct taping them together and collecting bottle caps and shooting mutants, right?
All those fun things.
Calling it post-apocalyptic, even though that is kind of what it is, I feel it is going to mislead people often. It feels almost like being on like the frontier or something. Like that's kind of the stakes.
Okay.
That like meeting a stranger isn't immediately like a fight or flight like threat assessment kind of situation.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I played, and I'll try and speak briefly about this because we are for sure going to do this for a podcast later, is I've been playing a Fallout New Vegas mod called New California that I may have alluded to in the past on the podcast we were going to do. So I installed it, and it's a lot more stable than the last time I played it, and seems to have just, like, some of the general funkiness of that of that mod ironed out, and that is just a hell of a mod. It's staggering just the amount of crap they put into it. So this is your official warning, listeners, that you should all start playing Fallout New California now. That way, when our episode drops, like probably a month from now or whatever, you'll be ready. And that's all I want to say about Fallout New California. It's tight. Save your game often. I will say that. It crashes the desktop a bit and crashes while loading your saves sometime. I ran into an issue where I would boot up the game and load my last save, and the game would just freeze during loading. And for a while, I was terrified that it meant that my save file was ruined and I had to go back to an older save. But it turns out if you just force close it, open it again, and load the save again, it might work the next time.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. So listeners, if that happens to you, like, remember this. Don't think that your save file's ruined, at least not right away. I mean, I suppose it still could happen. Yeah. So that's what I've been playing.
Okay.
Apparently just Fallout games. That's what Owen does.
Just play weird old Fallout games. I mean, there wasn't that time where you were like, hey, we're going to play Brotherhood of Steel.
That might still happen. Don't talk like you're off the hook on that, Matt.
No, I didn't. That's not what. But you said that, and then you downloaded it, and then we never did it, right?
Yeah. I want to basically, with Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, I have it on my hard drive somewhere. Yeah, but by the way, I did video game crimes. I pirated a game I don't own because, like, where the fuck are you going to get a copy of that? I want to play that more by myself and figure out if it's worth doing a podcast episode on. I'm not going to drag you guys into it if it's just a fucking lemon of a video game.
If, like, there's maybe something to talk about there.
Yeah. That's, like, one of my things I'm trying to do more in the podcast is, like,
vet the game before we have a shitty conversation about it.
Yeah, go in a little less blind on my games.
All right. You guys ready to talk about this game?
I am ready to talk some Hades.
Okay. Well, I chose this game, so I suppose I should tell you what the fuck it is.
Yeah, what is it?
Everybody remembers Bastion, right? It was the isometric game with the good narrator from Supergiant, where you got the various weapons and you beat up the weird ghosts with them. This is that, but more differenter and more of a roguelike.
Also, just a lot harder than Bastion by its structure.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like isometric action RPG roguelike. Yeah. And I picked it because it came out on Steam, and the other thing that was on the list was kind of like it, but I was more interested in this, so I just switched it at the last second. And it ended up being a really good situation, because I've beat the game like 9 times at this point. And I plan on doing it more. The post game, the like end game on this game is something else. It's a lot of fun. Having a good time with it. But yeah, how was your guys' time with this game? What do you want to say about that?
You want to go first, Keenan?
Sure. Yeah. So this game was a really interesting experience for me because I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to play a couple runs. And I was fucking wrong about that every time I booted it up. And that's not a bad thing, right? Like, I would be like, I'm going to play this for like an hour. And I'd look up and 3 hours went by. And I'd be like, one more run, let's go. And then like 2 more hours went by. And so like, there'd be a, like I just hit a point where like, I can't do any more Hades. And that's why I stopped. Instead of like, you know, playing it in reasonable amounts the way I might with some games. Because it does a really good job of, like, when your build is working and when the things you have are working, you find a cool rhythm of getting in a room and fucking shit up. And so, like, I really, really liked this, but I also, like, appear to have missed and or somehow messed up some of the endgame content I'm sure you're going to talk about more, Matt. I still don't have any way to upgrade stuff with Titan's Blood because I haven't gone and fixed that.
Apparently you morons both completely missed, not morons, that's rude, but apparently you guys missed the Titan Blood thing completely, which is sucks because that's like probably my favorite part of this game right now, is that there's just like certain new ways to use certain weapons. Like my least favorite weapon for the majority of the time that I've played this game has been the sword, and now it's one of my favorites because
of the way you altered it.
Upgrades from Titan Blood, the aspect of Poseidon, when you use your like default range attack, it leaves a little crystal in them, and you can't use your range attack again until it like falls out of them and you go pick it up off the ground.
Right.
With this, what happens is, if you do your special attack, which is like an overhead that does a huge slam, anyone who has a crystal in them, it falls out, and you can just go pick it up again.
Oh,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, which combined with Boiling Blood, which is like a mirror up, whatever. It's complicated. Immediately when I start talking about these things, I start talking about the synergies between them, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, yeah, this is like kind of your bullshit in games. It's like the crunchy build shit.
Yeah,
like. Taking talents and loadouts, like I think this is why Payday 2 was such a lasting game for you, is like you always like fucking thrive in that environment of like mixing and matching like skill trees and weapon perks and this and that
and having stuff to optimize towards a goal. And yeah,
I'm always the one of the three of us where when I get thrown into the part of the game that is a pile of number Legos, I figure out how to put them together easier. I have an easier time dealing with those environments than you guys. So
yeah,
that's always been my specialty.
For sure.
You speak systems in a way that neither of us do.
I had a hard time getting into this game at first. Like I started playing it nightly earlier than I usually would for a podcast game. And for like the first like 3 or 4 days, I had to like make myself do like a couple runs a night. Like I had a really hard time building momentum with it. Did you guys go into the settings at all?
Yeah.
Did you find the God mode setting?
I saw that and I didn't trigger it, but I used it.
I fucking love this. Nice. This is like maybe.
No, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, it is absolutely brilliant. This is like one of my favorite, and it's not like a approach that would work for just about any other game. Like, this isn't, like, something that should be industry standard or something. But what it does is every time you do a run and you fail, and so your character lives in the underworld of Hades, and you're trying to escape Hades, and when you die, you go back to the beginning, and you have to try again. And every time you fail, your damage reduction goes up by 1%.
It's
2%. 2%, yeah. 2%. So after, presumably after 50 runs, I'm invincible, but I didn't play that many rounds.
Well, so that's the part to me that's brilliant, is that you dial in what percentage damage reduction will, like, stop you entirely from dying.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's never going to be 100%. There's going to be a point where you can
fail forward. And
you
just
can just
sort of,
do it, right?
Yeah.
And initially, that's what I thought when I looked at the mirror and I saw the... I think it's Chthonic Vitality, or Thonic Vitality, the one where every time you exit a room, you get a certain amount of HP back. I thought that that would be infinite scaling.
Yeah, I thought that was going to go a lot further than it did.
And so
the idea was,
I thought it would
be
like eventually I get like 50 HP back every time I go through a room, and it's just like basically impossible for me to fail unless I completely suck.
Yeah,
but this was even smarter than that. Right?
Yeah, this is like such a smart. Difficulty setting change for this type of game, for like this like Sisyphusian roguelike.
Speaking of Sisyphus,
yeah.
great guy.
Oh,
great
yeah.
guy.
He's such a sweetie.
He's real cool.
Yeah. He looks like such a kind man, and he is.
Did you guys know you can give nectar to Boldy?
Oh, to
his rock, yeah.
It's very good.
The other thing I was just going to say real quick about God mode is that when you hover over it in the options, it says that this is for if you just want to enjoy a story, or if you just want an easier time and want to veg out, or for whatever reason you could think of. Like it lets you off the hook. It's not like fucking that thing we rail against in like old Doom difficulty menus where they're like you're a bitch, like you pussy,
like baby mode.
Right. yeah
also Also, it doesn't make you decide about it up front with the game. I think that that's the thing that's really common in video games. You start a new game and it says, hey, what difficulty do you want? And it's like, well, I've never played this type of game before. I don't know fucking anything about it. But yeah, let me just make one of the most important decisions about my playthrough.
Right, let me choose how I engage with it before I engage with it.
Yeah.
Like,
And so it does it in this way where you can opt into it later if you feel like you need it and you start searching for a way to make yourself less unhappy playing the game, which brings me to one of the things I wanted to talk about this game that I think is equally brilliant is the way the mirror works for buying your upgrades. So like you accrue a currency called darkness, which are like purple gemstones.
Darkness.
And you spend it at this mirror to buy, like, it's basically your skill tree.
Yeah.
It's a talent tree. But...
And it persists across runs is the important part.
Yeah, and it persists across runs. That the darkness are, like, one of the few, like, permanent things you can find on a run that just are going to make your life easier forever. But on your very first run when you play this game, you will start accruing darkness. However, the place where you use the darkness, the skill tree, like it's presented a little differently. It is a mirror in your bedroom, but it's functionally your skill tree, is not available to you immediately. So you are forced to play the game for an amount of time and get a handle for what you like about the game or get a sense of like what your weaknesses and what your strengths are while you're playing. And then later your skill tree is made available to you so that, again, like in lots of video games, you are shown your skill tree very early on and you are asked to make basically uninformed decisions that are going to have long lasting effects on you.
Right.
But here you are given your skill tree late enough that you kind of know what you want out of it, and you've probably already banked a little bit of currency for your skill tree.
Yeah, like, I got in there and I got to do a few things in there.
Yeah. And so, like, I think those two things are, like, really, really smart. Like, the just giving the player enough time to, like, get their feet wet in the game.
Well, and it does that with pretty much every gameplay feature. You mm-hmm. have to play for a little bit before it explains things to you, and you have the ability to interact with those things. Like, I am just now getting to the point where I'm starting to deal with what I consider like the real meat of the game, which is the system of hamstringing yourself in a run to get more points.
Oh yeah. It's the equivalent of doing skulls in Halo.
Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't feel like I had to do that at all in this game. Like, there were very few times I felt the need to tank a run for a resource, right? Like, I thought that was really cool that even if I was focused on getting keys to unlock something, I still get these other resources and will use them.
Well, yeah. I was talking about after you beat the game, there's the Pact of Punishment.
Yeah.
And you get the heat. So that I wasn't talking about like resource runs
that you have
to do sometimes in certain grindy roguelike-esque games. That's not what I was talking about at all.
And I think it just does a really good job of like, this is a genre of game that can be very unapproachable to the uninitiated in roguelikes.
Yes.
Or even just run-based games in general. If you're not familiar with run-based games, like it can be a really it's a really cold bath of water for someone who's not used to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think they have a lot of systems in place that have clearly been thought about a lot to let someone get comfortable and get into things.
Yeah. And especially like the thing that really keeps me going is the fact that every time I run into an NPC, the conversation is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I want to keep talking to Hypnos and Thanatos and Megara and Nyx or Orpheus and everybody.
Right, that it keeps on living as you go is really cool.
Yeah, it's a good way of like stretching narrative in a way over dozens of runs that doesn't feel really forced and artificial. Like, it would be really easy to like imagine like, yeah, it's gonna be a run-based game and we have to like slow trickle the story to the players, and it never feels like that, even though that's like literally what they're doing. Is they wrote like, you know, like Hypnos probably has like, let's say 1,000 lines of dialogue. I have no idea how many he has. I'm just making up a number. He has 1,000 lines of dialogue, and we're just going to and they get doled out to you by arbitrary thresholds of how many times you've spoken to Hypnos. And then there's probably like other triggers too, like you did so and so thing, or you beat this boss, and so Hypnos will remark on that. But like they do like a really gentle and naturally flowing way of like having all these things like sort of crop up here and there. Like I really like, one of the things I really like is the bosses, like Megara, like, is that how you say your name?
Am
I saying
whatever, right? It's Greek, we're all saying it wrong.
Close enough,
yeah, whatever, yeah. Her name's fucking Meg. Anyway, you know, like Meg, when you meet her the first time, she talks a big game because she's a boss, and it's the first time you got to the boss, so of course she fucking whoops your ass. And she'll even talk a bunch of shit the second and third time, but you know what, if you've been beating her a few times, like, the tone of your conversation every time you meet her, like, has like this like shift to it that like made me think of like Batman and the Joker or something like that, where like they know they're gonna fight and Batman's probably gonna win. It's not a certainty, but then they talk at each other like kind of old friends, kind of resenting each other.
Right.
So there was a conversation. I literally beat the game for the again right before we started podcast. And as I walk out of the River Styx, Meg is talking to Hypnos, and Hypnos, like, you know how he gives you little tips about whatever enemy killed you? Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, yeah, you gotta avoid those laser beams, or whatever, you know.
What the fuck do you know about this,
Hypnos? Exactly. So apparently he does that to her every time you kill her.
Oh,
and
no.
She's, like, standing there yelling at him, or not yelling at him, but, like, glowering at him, being like,
that's very funny.
You hear this shit he's trying to tell me? I need to dodge your attacks better.
I got that one, yeah. Like, yeah, and meanwhile, like, Hypnos gets yelled at by your dad, Hades, all the time, of like, are you keeping track? Like,
yeah, the god of naps is in charge of, like, writing things down and keeping track of stuff. Okay, sure.
Yeah, and the god of being, like, an insufferable ding-dong.
I don't know, I like Hypnos, he's just sleepy.
Yeah, I don't hate him, but he definitely, like, seems...
I'm not a big fan.
He seems misguided.
Okay.
I don't like him snarking at me when I die. Like, I die, I come back from a run, and it's just like, fuck off, dude. Like, fuck off. Like, I will talk to you later.
Okay. So what was everybody's favorite run?
Favorite run.
I want you to describe your favorite run.
Okay.
The most enjoyable run.
It's the run I beat the game on. And so I had a hard... So, like, the game is broken into, like, the levels are different, like, biomes or areas. They're the different planes of the afterlife, right? Like you have Elysium and Asphodel. And what's the first one called? It's Tartarus, right? Yeah,
Tartarus.
I had a very hard time in Asphodel a lot, because I... like dashing like a lot, and that result,
yeah, the high mobility stuff in this game just feels good.
Yeah, it feels really great. But that means I wind up like standing in magma a lot. And so, like, there was just like this really high hit point tax in Asphodel for me, and so I had a hard time getting past it. And then the first run that I finished Asphodel, I beat the game.
Nice.
That fucking,
like, Elysium was just no fucking problem.
No, it was fucking nothing. Also, like, the enemies in Elysium, their abilities, like, fit together like a jigsaw puzzle piece with my playstyle in a way that like didn't happen in the first two areas. So I just fucking steamrolled Elysium, and then fucking Theseus and the Minotaur went down like punks.
who died first?
The Minotaur.
Minotaur.
Yep.
Okay.
Right. I
always kill Theseus first, or Perseus.
Or is it Perseus?
I think it's not Theseus.
It's the guy who kills the Minotaur that gets paired with the Minotaur.
Yeah, because, like, now they're old friends in the afterlife.
They're old friends in the afterlife because they're both dead and fucking whatever. Yeah, like...
Anyway, yeah, they went down like fucking punks. I had a build that is... very dash focused. I use the buckler a lot. I really like the shield in this game.
Yeah.
If you're shot
that
by projectiles,
free knockback.
If you're shot by projectiles while you're dashing, they are.
Or while you're holding the dash, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm bad at dodging projectiles, so if I can just make myself immune to projectiles, like, almost all the time, that's really awesome for me.
Yeah.
That, like, so it's like, I'm going to equip the shield, and I'm just going to dash as much as much as possible. And then I got one of those abilities that makes, like, something cool and damaging happen in your wake, wherever you dashed from. And so it wasn't so much that, like, I got to the Minotaur and Theseus or Perseus or whatever. It wasn't so much that I targeted one of them and killed them. It's more that I just...
Oh, yeah, it was Theseus. My bad.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Because I know jack shit about, like, fucking Greek mythology. So this is exciting for me that I got a thing right. But anyway, what I was saying is, like, it's not that I targeted one of them. It's more just I dashed all fucking over the place, and then one of them died first.
Well, Theseus blocks a lot. Like, if you attack him from the front, your attack fizzles.
So
the Minotaur is just open to damage more, if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's probably the systemic way in which the Minotaur died first.
So I always go after Theseus because he feels like a... Because he has the spear ability that you do. Mm-hmm. And it's such a fucking problem if I'm focusing on the Minotaur.
I had to keep an eye on him the whole time. It was like, oh, he's about to throw it. Gotta dash.
I didn't have to keep an eye on shit. Theseus is a punk.
So, I think the shield is... Actually, no. The first time I got the bow and got abilities that made the bow feel good is my favorite.
I agree with you.
Because the bow is this weapon that on its own has a lot of trade-offs, right? Like, yeah, it's ranged, but it doesn't, like, do as much damage, but you're also, like, probably safer from a distance.
Yeah, and you can dash in and special right in their butt.
Right. Yeah.
I wanted to like the bow, but it felt like a harder trade-off than I was ready to make.
It's tough, and to really maximize the damage, you have to time the power attack on it right, which is basically your character flashes white and then you let go.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, like, I want to say it does, like, 70% more damage when you can hit those. And then the other thing I love about the bow is that it penetrates through the first target. If you're aiming it long enough that it's going to go through multiple things, it hits everything in its line.
Yeah.
So if you can get stuff where, like, stuff gets hit by lightning bolts or explodes, or you can apply a debuff on your first attack or something like that, the bow ends up being this thing where you can just stack a lot of bullshit on the enemies really quick.
What can I tell you? Can I tell you about my favorite run?
Yeah.
So immediately after I beat the game with the shield, because dead simple, right? You just keep dashing.
Yeah.
And that run, I got the Daedalus Hammer, where your charge charges up faster.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, always be charging, like ABC.
If I'm not moving, I'm doing this.
Yeah. But I got the bow. I came back after that first run, and I got access to Titan Blood upgrades. And one of the upgrades is if you hit them with an attack, your special now seeks them.
Like,
it just homes in on them.
Is your special the little red crystal thing you shoot, or is that your...
No, that's your cast. The special with the bow is you fire a fan of arrows.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It has, like, special keywords for your different abilities, and I always mix them up, and they do a really good job of tooltipping in a way where I can always figure out what they're talking about.
Yeah, there's an icon for it, yeah.
Yeah, but I also never learn it because they are so good about reminding me.
Okay.
The game won't remember for me.
You know how it drops a boon right as you come out of the gates at the beginning of the game?
Mm-hmm.
Right after you leave your father's house, there's just a boon right there. First boon I got was a Daedalus Hammer. And the Daedalus Hammer said, for each arrow that hits during your special, it does 3 additional damage.
Mm.
All right.
So you understand, like, I have to hit them with my attack, and then I do the special, and they get hit by every arrow in the special.
And take 3 additional damage per arrow.
Per arrow.
For people who haven't played, the special on the bow... is an attack that does a fan of arrows in front of you.
We just said that.
Did we? Okay. Sorry.
Also, for people who haven't played the game, like, why the fuck are you here? Play the game.
Yeah, go play Hades. It's a fun game.
Yeah. Even if you don't like run-based games or roguelikes, like, give it a shot.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. But anyway, that was kind of that, you know? I just kind of did that. After that, the run was just done, and it was a great time. I very much enjoyed it. Right now I'm playing with, there's a Titan Blood upgrade for the fists, where every time you hit with 12 basic attacks, your next uppercut hits multiple times.
Ooh, that's really good.
Yeah, yeah. It was really good.
Did you guys unlock the gun?
Yeah. I did, but I didn't use it.
You have to have every weapon to get Titan Blood upgrades.
Okay. Tell me about the gun, because I've heard about it, and I never got it. Like, so, I realized really quickly that I didn't like any of the weapons except for the shield, so I stopped spending my Thonic keys on weapons.
The gun and the shield, or the gun and the fists have very similar problems, in my opinion, just at different ranges, which is that they are all attack all the time. And there's very little about them that's naturally defensive, the way that the shield and the spear can do, okay. And the way that the sword will very easily do if you get the right upgrades. So it becomes a lot more about your positioning and knowing the enemy's attack patterns and knowing when it's safe to hit them. But the gun has some really cool upgrades, so... At the very basic, what it does is it has, I think, 12 or 18 arrows in it. It might be 12. And you have to manually reload it by clicking in the second stick on your controller. Or just emptying the clip and not doing anything.
Okay.
And then its special is a lobbed grenade that you aim by, like, holding Y and moving the stick a little bit. So it's a little finicky in that. But
this sounds like not the thing for me. It sounds cool, but this sounds like not my
cool, shit. It's cool and fun, but if you're already like at the point where you're like, nah, man, I just shield, right? Like, the next weapon you need to try, in my opinion, is the spear.
I'm fucking terrible about using, oh my god, the nomenclature thing again, about shooting my little fucking right-click red bolt, or even using my shield throw. Like, I'm fucking terrible about using my ranged options.
Yeah.
I'm definitely like a left click spammy mashy mess of just shield bashing people and then dashing all over the place.
I fell in love with the spear when I got the Daedalus upgrade where it hits 7 people before it comes back to you. It bounces between a bunch of people and does plus 30% damage on each additional person that it hits.
Ooh, that's brutal.
So it was really good at like getting rid of large rooms of people.
Daedalus has really cool ranged upgrades.
I really like it when I get a Daedalus hammer and it completely changes the way that I'm playing. Or like what my plan was, you know? Like, I have a plan for like what kind of boons and stuff I want to get, and the Daedalus will just throw a hammer into those works and change my game plan completely.
Yeah, the run I won the game with, I had the spear, and I ended up getting this this combo of Doom on my spear throws. Doom is a debuff that happens where when you hit someone with your weapon, they just take a bunch of damage a little bit afterwards. So I think I had like 50 Doom damage anytime I threw the spear. But then I also somewhere along the way got something where if I'd hit them with my ranged attack, my close-up attacks would do more damage.
Yeah, that was the other one I got with the shield. I got the one that I won was... when you throw your shield, your next 2 attacks do plus 80% damage. That was amazing.
So then I ended up getting a bunch of Demeter buffs to slow my regular spear attack, and then I ended up getting the duo boon where I think it's Demeter and Zeus.
That duo buff is amazing.
So when you stack 10 stacks of the frozen debuff on someone, they explode for a bunch of damage. And so the thing that ended up happening... I got a Hermes upgrade where I could just hold the button to do a stab combo.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is anyone who tries to come near me just starts getting stabbed a lot and slowed down the whole time. And I basically played this really fucked up interrupt build that pretty much wrecked everything in my way as long as I was hitting it.
Yeah.
I feel like the Hermes boons are always the ones that, like, on paper sound, like, not mechanically interesting.
Oh, but they're game changers.
But they're fucking game changers, right? It's like, your charge-up ability on the shield is super fast now. Or, like, you can dash an extra time. Or everything you do is faster. Or, like, this or that. You know,
On the most recent playthrough I just did, the 2 epic boons I had were when you dash, you unleash water everywhere and damage.
Oh, yeah, that one's really good.
And then... And then Hermes was like, hey, you want to dash three extra times before needing to recharge? So just like, just fill the room with water and nobody can hurt me.
Yeah. Yeah. So. My most successful runs were usually me getting the Hermes one that gives me the third dash and then having some sort of boon that puts just some sort of fucked up source of damage wherever I just dashed either from or to. Mm-hmm. And then just me dashing all over the place and making just like a big mess.
So yeah, so I'm a big fan of that Whirling Blades thing.
You use the multi-dash. Yeah. Kanan, do you also use the multi-dash one in the mirror?
Not really. I
use the one where if you get a near miss, you get a damage bonus.
I didn't really end up using those because I didn't trust myself to get the near misses every time.
Oh, man, they happen so much.
I ended up doing, like, a dash, attack sort of thing most of the time because I trusted my ability to get somewhere safe for a second,
do some damage, and then get out. Which one you invested in, but I guess neither?
No, I would usually buff the dash somehow, but I wouldn't get more dashes. I didn't usually feel the need for more dashes. I was usually handling it okay.
No, I mean, but in the mirror, there's the two options. There's the purple option and the green option, right?
I don't know if I got that far into the mirror.
Okay. I think it's in the first bit, but yeah, whatever. Who's your favorite god? I guess Owen said Hermes.
I like his boons the most. He's not the person I like the
most. Oh, I meant boons. I was thinking mechanically purely, but hey, yeah, do that. Talk about that, too.
Okay, so, like, every time you talk to these gods, it'll tell you, like, hey, if you talk to, you know, Hermes, you know, 10 more times, you know, you're going to get one more heart in his relationship, and he'll say something different to you, right? And that's like a mechanic that exists for, like, all of the characters in this game. And it tracks this for when you talk to Charon, and Charon just like grunts at you.
Yeah.
He's fucking zombie. And I want to know what the payoff is there.
I
don't want you to, but okay. Like, I talked to him as much as possible. I gave him all the ambrosia I could. Like, I'm not sure how much more time I'll spend with this game. I'll probably revisit it when 1.0 comes out, because like the game is in early access. It's in its like next to last update before 1.0.
Let me just ask you a question.
What's up?
Did you ever steal from Charon?
No, why would I do that? He's my friend.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you can like fight him, right? He can become... Yeah. An extra boss.
Every so often, a money sack will appear as an extra thing behind him in his shop, and if you steal it, it does an extra boss fight.
Okay.
Oh man, I just want to say this before we like move on from crunchy mechanical shit. There's a Daedalus Hammer upgrade for the shield that makes it so when you're using the shield's charge, not just your dash, but like the shield's like left click and do a charge forward. If you are hit, I think it's also during the dash. I'm mixing it up. It's during the dash. It's if you were hit by a ranged projectile during the dash, instead of just blocking it, it reflects it back to its sender.
Yeah. Yep.
And it makes the Megara fight very funny because she goes into that phase where she just makes the whole map into a bullet hell.
Yeah.
And so what you do then is instead of trying to like just stay safe for like a minute until she like stops doing that or calms down or whatever. What you do is you just dash around back and forth as much as possible. So not only are you not being hurt like always, but you are actually doing quite a bit of damage to her.
You're sending it back
during
at her.
This period. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's just staying in one place, so it's not like she's dodging her own projectiles coming back at her. Like, she's just getting fucking whomped by her own shit.
That boon creates my favorite runs because I become an asshole.
Yeah.
I become the guy charging at enemy projectiles and charging at them and hitting them afterwards.
Yeah.
Instead of the guy who's like, oh, dodge everything. Yeah. Dodge everything. Oh, dodge everything. It's like, no. Well, throw things at me, please.
All of the stuff causes deflection, so you can do that kind of shit with it.
Yeah. It like, gives you permission to just be a lot worse at the game. You know what I mean? I don't have to like read the tells of all these enemies when they're about to do this and that. It's like, nah, like, fuck it. I'm just going to get in your shit. Like, buckle up, motherfuckers, it's me.
There's a thing you can do with her sisters when you start having to fight Megara's sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They produce much, much thicker clouds of projectiles, yeah, so this do. Effect is much, much worse if you know how to do it correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, if you aim them right.
So,
I forgot, like, how, like, when I booted up this game, I was really struck by, like, it's been a while since I played a Supergiant game. Like, the last one we played was Pyre, and that was, like, I think more than a year ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Point. And, like, I forgot, like, how well produced just every aspect of this game is.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the sprite work, and like, all, like, everything is just gorgeous. The sound design is great, and, like, the music and the, even just, like, the quality of the voice acting and shit. All the portraits of all the Greek gods, like, everyone's, like, hot as fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
In different ways, too.
Highly bangable characterization. Yes.
Yeah, like, everyone's hot as fuck in, like, completely different ways. Just, like, god damn.
So, two things I want to say from, like, a sound design perspective. They have this this way of texturing their voice audio that makes it feel, like, to me, that it's not recorded at all. It makes it feel like just there's a person with a very good voice in the room with me.
Yeah.
There's a richness to the texture of it that makes me want to send a message to their sound design guy and be like, hey, what filters do you do?
There's a depth to it that feels missing in other games.
And, like, and I feel like the answer is like a $2,000 microphone, but whatever. Like, they do some magic over there. And then the second thing I wanted to say is I have a personal thing where when I listen to someone singing, not at like a rock concert, but like someone just singing, like show tunes do it, you know, where I get really uncomfortable and I don't want to be there anymore and I don't want to hear it anymore. Supergiant games are the only games I've ever played where someone singing triggers this in me. Because it's so well recorded and because it feels like you're in a room with a person just singing, right?
Huh. Like, yeah, okay.
Transistor did it to me. Pyre did it to me. This game does it to me. So when you talk to Eurydice, so
is it specifically just like soloist singing?
No, it's. I don't really want to get into it more, but it's. Yeah,
okay, I was just curious because that's like one of their signatures is like, Supergiant games often like feature like vocal solo singing with not a lot of like instrumental backing.
Yeah, that might have something to do with it, but it's never been something that I've. It's just I don't like musicals. Like,
yeah,
fucking hate Hamilton. For multiple reasons.
I feel like what we're talking about here about like the insane production quality in every single area. I feel like Supergiant builds a game and they're like, until it gets fives in every category in EGM, we aren't done. Right? Yeah. That everyone takes their piece of that game so seriously, and so like, this is my art and I'm doing it. Like, well, so they go so hard in all of their arenas that it just comes out to be this incredible product, right? Like,
going back to our conversation earlier about Halo, including the directors.
Right. That this entire, everyone is doing everything they can in whatever space they're in, including the writing and the everything.
It's not just that like the art department is making 10 out of 10 art and the sound department's making 10 out of 10 sound. It's that like it all like has like, it's very clear all these things come together in a very holistic way.
Right, it fits, right?
None of these things are being made independently of each other's without consideration for each other. That they all, yeah.
They share that feel, yeah, like, huh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even done yet.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, there's one more big update. You get to the end of this game, and you beat your father Hades in single combat, and then the game says, well, I know you just escaped from Hades, but, like, what if you didn't?
I think it says something along the lines of, like, we know you did it, but there's actually more to come, and we haven't done it yet, so just pretend you didn't.
Well, there's actually many different lines that it gives
okay.
you.
Okay, all right.
One of them is Hades went off, and he did the thing, but let's just pretend that, or Zagreus went off, and he did the thing that he said he was going to do, and he found his mom, but let's just pretend Hades gave him a good clobbering, and just go back.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where he goes, well, he lived to a ripe old age, and then he died. And came back. Let's pretend that he slipped and fell and died. right. came back, right? Very silly. Which goes back to the Supergiant theme of having antagonistic and somewhat powerful narrators.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, the, yep. yeah the narrator gets like a weird amount of agency over your experience.
Well, it actually like gives Zagreus a spoiler at one point that becomes mm-hmm. his core motivation. Right? Like,
yeah. Oh yeah, because like, of the flashback thing.
In his mother's hand. Wait, my mother? I thought Nyx was my mom. It's like, no.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah. It's Persephone.
Did anyone get to the end of the line with Achilles? Because he's just kind of chilling.
I don't think I finished out anyone's like story. Okay.
I haven't either, but I've gotten quite far with Achilles, and his whole deal is Patroclus.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I like that he's sort of like, oh, you did the thing, that's cool. Like, like I enjoyed talking to him anytime I hit, like, a milestone. Cause he's like, I saw you did the thing.
I kind of feel... So this is a game I don't... I'm not super drawn to go back to it, and it seems in the way that it seems you two are. But, like, I almost feel kind of bad with how quickly I moved past Theseus and the Minotaur, because I want to know more of their dialogue. But, like, I only, like, encountered them the one time.
So, you know how you can get many bosses? Where, like, mm-hmm. you'll see on the door, it'll have the little skull, and be like, there's a difficult enemy on the other side of this door.
Yeah.
One of those can be the Minotaur by himself.
Yeah, 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 I did get that in a non-finishing run.
Yeah, and he'll tell you about why him and Theseus are the way they are and that kind of thing, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also really like that when you fight him, he gets down to, like, a quarter of his health, he's like, I'm tired, I'm leaving.
yeah.
It's like my ball and going home.
I gotta go rest up for when we fight for real.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've talked about all the things with this game, would you say?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say?
All right, Cerberus cool. is Clifford the Red Dog with three heads.
Yeah. It's Cerberus is, you know, Supergiant is good at animals.
It making things. A cute, lovable pet.
Yeah.
Did anyone fight him?
Like, directly?
I have to assume one of the options is to fight him if you don't go into the labyrinth.
You can't.
You can't? Okay.
No, you can't. You can pet the dog in this game, but you yep. cannot kill the dog in this game.
Okay. I always just went to go find his food, and I thought that if you, like, stepped up to him that it would be a
no,
thing.
No, I respect their noble choice to not make you kill a dog in the game, but instead you give him treats.
Yep.
I also love all the writing for when you go pet him, because the narrator's like, the unknowable god dog pays no heed and can't understand the language of man. And then Zagreus is like, hey, what's up, dude? Here some scooches. And Cerberus will be like, murr, 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 and just
I love that only one of his heads enjoys being scratched.
yeah.
I liked the Ghidorah derpy one head thing that they were doing there too. I thought it was good.
All right. Are we putting this game through the paces now?
Yes. But before we do that, Keenan, you had a thing you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I mentioned the XFL before when it came back, and the news today is that the Rock and his former ex-wife / business partner and someone else bought the XFL for a very low amount of $15 million today. And I think that's hilarious and stupid.
15 million, huh?
Yeah, which, like, when you consider there's, like, 12 sports teams in that company, that's probably, like, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, like there are many professional athletes who have $15 million salaries by themselves.
Right, right. So, like, that's fucking wild.
I don't know shit about sports, but I'm just going to say that.
Well,
it's
probably
true.
Didn't The Rock used to be a footballman?
He was a football guy and got injured to the point where he could not football anymore, and that's when he became a wrestler.
So, well, I hope that through empathy, he will do a better job than Vince would have.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird thing, and, like, it just happened, so there's, like, no other news, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that going around today, that he doesn't just, like, 100% own it, but he's, like, the majority holder or something.
He's
now,
he's
right?
one-third, yeah.
Okay.
And then the thing is the lady who is his ex-wife, the mother of his daughter, and the his manager / business partner, is the other one of the other thirds, and then someone they both know. So like,
okay,
they're all in on it together, and it's fine theoretically. That like,
the House of Rock has a cabal that controls the XFL.
Yes, they are a stable. What owns the company?
Yeah, interesting.
Okay. Yes. Time for the things at the end.
Hey, so this is episode 70, by the way.
I'm aware.
Oh, no.
Okay. That there's more things to do.
Oh, no.
Don't think I don't know.
I can't believe last episode we forgot to mention that it was episode 69.
Ah, nice!
Yeah.
That may have been on purpose.
Well, maybe by one host.
Yes. Although I will say, if there's one protagonist of a game, the Night in the Woods is probably the game I would feel most comfortable having 69.
Yeah.
Just May. But I don't consider a cat. I don't see genus.
Oh no! So. Don't do that.
No, but, yeah, that's why we waited so long. Let's just lie and say that that's why it took us so long to do that.
yeah, we did that.
It was on purpose, we swear. Okay, the Disco Elysium's out of 5. The automatic 1 point for having an actual Elysium in this game.
Fair,
yeah.
I'll agree with that. Okay.
The game is about cyclical failure.
Yeah. It's about failure. It's also...
about talking to people.
Also, like, the Greek gods are interesting. They set themselves apart from other, like, religious framework in that, like, all of the Greek gods are very fallible. That it's always about their own weaknesses.
Well, that was common in that era.
Yeah. And that they almost exist as... like figures to be overcome, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're forces of nature. Yeah.
And not even to like be defeated, but just be like, yeah, dude, I don't sleep around as much as Zeus. You know, I don't make as much baby mama drama as Zeus does.
I forget where I read this, but it was a thing about just small little bit about how like the Greek gods, the gods that became the Greek gods, were originally Etruscan, right? Mm-hmm. And the Etruscan gods were like, oh, these are horrible, like, malefic natural forces that we have to sacrifice to not piss off so they don't just fucking murder us. Right. And the Greeks were like, no, these are, like, natural forces that don't really give a shit about us, and we have to, like, navigate around them.
Right.
Right? And the Romans were like, no, this is a business contract. If I sacrifice a sheep, Saturn owes me business fortune for like this amount of time, right? Like, so is it, yeah, the, just to your comment about the conception of Greek gods, so
I think that's very consistent that like as far as like deific pantheons go, they're very like humanized and very fallible and very like close to our own experience. And I think that's something that's very consistent, and it is also very present in Disco Elysium.
Yeah, like it's very much about like human failure. Yeah,
yeah. Like the narrative in this game is not branching in the same way, and you won't like your narrative arc with a character on my playthrough won't be very different from yours, except perhaps in the regard that yours went farther with that character than mine did. But that's as much as our experiences with a deity varies. Really.
So it can't be a 5. It's probably not a 4.
Yeah, I'd be fine with a 3.
Yeah, a 3.
Yeah, 3 seems three seems good. Correct.
All right. Temtem. They're very brightly colored, both games.
Oh gosh.
They are both a lot of math, although in neither of them do you have to do any of that math.
No. Also Temtem, at least for the part of the game I played it, has this like pseudo Mediterranean aesthetic to it.
Oh yeah, I suppose that's true.
I want to give it a non-zero amount, but I don't want to give it very much.
I think a 2 is what I'm feeling.
I'm feeling a 1, but I'd be okay with it getting a 2.
Kenan,
I feel like besides what we've mentioned, there isn't a lot of crossover, so I think a 1 is fair.
All right.
Breath of the Wild.
Ooh. I'm not sure if I have quite the vocabulary to say the feeling I'm experiencing, but I feel like the combat in this game feels very related and adjacent to the Breath of the Wild's combat, especially the way the different weapons in Breath of the Wild feel very dynamic and different from one another. That like
yeah,
the way
and that your
like,
weapon dictates your play style.
Yeah. The way yeah. like heavy axes and pole arms and swords all feel very like very different and result in you moving in a different way through the environment and combat.
See, I was just gonna do a like journey of personal discovery. In a wide world where you're expected to get like beat the fuck up a lot.
Well, also the hero of time like dies and fails a lot over and over and over, right?
Yeah.
And you're also like this weird semi, oh, yeah. like Link is like kind of a demigod figure.
Yeah, he's like and, mythical, like Hercules.
Yeah. And he's part of a big mythical repeating arc of defeating Ganon and defeating evil and rescuing the princess and going to Castle Hyrule. So like. Like I'd be willing to give it, yeah. I think like a 3. I would feel really good about that.
Yeah, I'm good on a 3.
I like 3. You made most of the cases I was going to, so
yeah.
I think there's also a really good rich, crossover of cool side characters in both games.
Totally. Mm. Like good point. Like side characters that don't have like branching narrative, but they're very colorful and vibrant people.
Yeah, and they definitely exist like outside of what you're doing in their own spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Is there Tingle in Breath of the Wild?
You can get Tingle's clothes.
Oh, okay, but there's no Tingle himself.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, like some of those things aren't quite like returning in the same way.
All right, Kenan, you're gonna take point on this one, okay?
Okay.
Get your gun out, Rabbit.
Yeah.
Titanfall 2.
Titanfall 2. Jesus. Yeah, I did this.
That's not why.
No, just... but I did. Yeah, How is Hades like Titanfall 2?
Think of even one way in which they're like...
I guess you kind of time travel in Hades, but that's kind of it.
Knives are involved.
Yeah,
no. I don't think there's a lot there. Unless you wanna like invoke the big damn heroes do dumb cool shit clause. other than that, that's not really something I can put these two together on.
Those are some Kenan's draws, and I'm glad we didn't reach for them. Let's. You've got the longest fucking reach in this segment, dude. Like,
yeah. 15 foot reach in this.
Yeah. The fucking college dissertation. So what? Why I think? Yeah. Anyway.
Oh no! If I had a degree, it would be an English degree. Like I recognize that.
Yeah. Anyway, Gang Beasts.
There's a lot of slamming.
Yeah. Also, like it's a fast action game.
Yeah. Okay.
I would feel good about a non-zero, but not super high value for Gang Beasts.
I'm feeling somewhere in the region of a 3 or a 4.
The combat in this feels like it has a high skill ceiling, and Gang Beasts feels like it has a high skill floor and a low ceiling.
That is my favorite thing about Gang Beasts.
Yeah.
Is that it's just impossible to be so good at Gang Beasts, you can consistently beat another person at Gang Beasts.
Right. Like, dumb luck and weird timing are things in Gang Beasts that come into play more than in any other game.
This is why it is perfect to play with children.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because like they will occasionally throw you off the level when you had the advantage the whole time.
Like, you can get not... you can bring up how bad you are at the game, but you can never really get very high on how good you are. That, like, no matter how good you are, another player can always just punch the cables on the elevator car and we all die.
the thing is, there used to be a really high skill ceiling because there was this, like, thing you could do where you raise your butt in midair and slam it into people's faces. And this mm-hmm. was like, this was like one hit KO people if you were running, but they, yep. but they nerfed that shit. And now there's no way to be good at the game. And I love it.
Good. Good, good, good.
Yeah. I also figured out that we had to stop playing Death Race in Hidden in Plain Sight because it's got a bullet and a crosshair.
Oh.
But I realized that that game is packed in these, like, asset pack folders, and so there might be a way I can get in there and just switch the sprite and switch the sound.
It just make the crosshair, like, I don't know, a square.
Yeah, or just, like, a mouse cursor mm-hmm. or something. Yeah, a square would probably work. It just needs to be cool for, like, parents to walk in and see.
Yeah.
And I'm going to replace the sound effect of the gun going off with just the gotcha part from Dave Chappelle yelling, gotcha, bitch.
That will get you in less trouble.
Yes, it will.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
But that's just going to be the initial sound. Because what we're going to do is we're going to auction off the sound rights to the kids.
Okay.
As like a prize incentive thing. Anyway, yeah. Oh boy. Zagreus in. Or I know, sorry.
Other way.
Harrier Dubois.
Harrier Dubois reaches Tartarus.
Reaches Tartarus. Ooh, I think boy sinks to the bottom.
Yeah, I think he's a sad sack.
Yeah.
I think he goes all in on self pity because he's in hell.
There's no getting out.
Yeah, I think he somehow finds lots of nectar and gives it out to everyone, but doesn't really make it out of Tartarus.
And he thinks he deserves it. You know, like...
And he brought his own gun.
Yeah.
They can't hit shit with
it. But here's the thing, is like, he doesn't use the gun to fight, he just, like, shoots holes all over the place and, like, has a tantrum.
The same way you have an option to clean up the restaurant from Cerberus's last thing, you can clean up Harry's fucking bullet holes.
Yeah. Yeah, can I propose, like, a slight changing of the framing of this device here?
Go for it.
It's more that Zagreus fails his run and, like, oh my god, who the fuck is this guy? Oh my god, he's got a gun. He's pointing it at himself? Doesn't he know he's dead? You know, it's like, he's just making a scene when he comes back and Harry's there making a scene when he realizes he's in the afterlife and, like, not the good one.
And then he fucking, like, sings while continuously blowing his own head open and coming out of the pool.
Yeah, and, like, sobbing on the shoulder of just whoever's closest to him.
It's definitely Hypnos. Hypnos is the victim in this narrative.
Yeah. God.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was fun to think about.
Yeah.
Me from the past. Good job.
Fun thought experiment.
I don't think this is a Gilligan Toilet Skull. I don't think there's a Moira Brown.
No.
Because you will eventually see all the things. They are missable, but not in the way that we make fun of with this thing. Okay. Well,
I mean, they're only missable in the sense that you didn't play them, or you did.
Yeah. Okay. I need five new games, guys.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, God. Also, we need a new person. No, we don't. We already figured this out. It's May.
Yeah. May Borowski. Is it Borowski? Yeah.
Borowski, yeah.
Yeah. May Borowski gets dropped into a different game.
Okay.
Originally, I wanted us to do the Frog Detective as the person who gets plopped in, but I think he would just get killed a lot because lots of games are violent and the Frog Detective is not.
Yeah. Okay. So, May?
For a game touchstone, I put forth House of the Dying Sun.
Hmm. Okay.
So you've already... Okay. I'm going to give a little bit of pushback here, because you've already used TIE Fighter.
I was just thinking the same thing.
You son of a bitch. And this is the same thing.
I feel like House of the Dying Sun is just going to be a more grimdark TIE Fighter metric.
I was eyeballing House of the Dying Sun for very different reasons, but this is absolutely a fair pushback.
This is like, I'm not, you, I believe, in this case, have ultimate say, and there's no, like, bylaw that lets me prevent you from
doing
this. Well,
because in general, we get one each, and then we work the other two out, right?
Yes,
is how we normally do this.
That is the normal procedure, yes.
Okay. I don't know if that's the one I want to ram through, though.
Okay.
So we can come back, I guess.
I've got one I want to put on.
Okay.
Do you remember that game? I don't think you guys played it, but I think you know enough about it to use it as a touchstone. Do you remember the game I told you about back in December? Kind Words, Lo-Fi Chill Beats to Write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great.
You write and receive emotional letters, and it's a tender little small indie game about feelings, and you touch real people.
Tender. That's a good word for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Kind Words is...
Yeah. Okay. XCOM.
XCOM? Have we not done XCOM before?
No, we haven't. I have them all in this document here, and XCOM's not in there. And I'm not saying any extra words. I'm just saying XCOM.
Okay? That's what I was going to say. Like, are we going to differentiate at all or no? Because I'm fine either way.
Is this the XCOM franchise just as a whole?
Yes.
Okay.
But the ones where there's soldiers, or not soldiers, there's dudes with guns and it's isometric. Those ones. Not any of the other ones.
Not the weird fucking third-person shooter one.
You're not allowed to talk about that.
Okay, mine is Control.
Okay. I think that's a really good one.
I think there's a lot to work with there.
The game has a lot of panache, so that's like a metric we could use to, like, address that. But also, like, Control is a game that, like, is just a fucking video game-ass video game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the Titanfall 2 of this list.
And yes, it's, like, super technically sharp, and, it's got, like, a lot of stuff to work with.
Visually really striking, too.
I was going to say Doom Eternal, but now I'm going to say Obi-Dinny.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
I'm down. Yeah, that's a fun one.
All right, so we have what? Control, Obi-Din, Kind Words.
XCOM. We need one more.
One more?
Mm-hmm.
I
believe I have used up all of my ability to say things. And I've used up all my influence points, fellas. This one's on you.
Sure.
Because I talked us out of House of the Dying Sun. I did an unqualified XCOM.
Your internal capital.
And I did Obradin. So, like, I've pulled some moves here, all right?
Can you read back with the four we have again?
Okay, so we got Mae Borowski, Kind Words, XCOM, Control, Obradin. So we're kind of covered on AAA Indie Divide, and we're kind of covered on Slow Game, Fast Game. So we might need something that's like... No, because we got XCOM for like complicated, Kind Words for simple.
Okay, I've identified what we're missing. Because Gang Beasts used to be one of our touchstones, and that refers to part one of the things that touchstone signifies is like
big dumb,
and also just like multiplayer nonsense with your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Can I propose for the last one, Sea of Thieves?
I have not played Sea of Thieves.
That's kind of my issue with it, is I don't actually have that feeling.
Okay,
but I also know enough game, people though, who play it, and yeah, like I think I can work my way through that if we pick it,
but I don't have a first-hand feeling. I have a better one that accomplishes the same thing that you guys have played.
Okay.
Garry's Mod.
Jesus Christ, Ellen. All right.
Because like, right. Garry's Mod also like brings in something I don't think we've covered in the Bad Sinners before, which is like weird, fucked up filth that people can just make on the internet. Just
user-created horse shit.
User-created mod shit.
Okay. All right, we're done, yeah, Kanan.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to counter that.
Okay. I don't want to be in this space anymore.
Garry's Mod.
Fuck off. But so, what are we playing next time?
It's my pick, and I have picked Tonight We Riot.
Okay.
Which is a 2D side-scrolling beat 'em up type angle on the camera, but it's a game about building a protest group and keeping them safe while fighting the power.
Okay.
And if you bought the Black Lives Matter itch.io bundle, you
own it.
It's
in there. Yeah.
See, that's a thing to say. That's good.
Yeah.
No, thank you for catching that, because I meant to.
Yeah, no problem. It's also produced by a worker-owned company.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
It's produced by... So there's a worker-owned streaming service called Means TV, which if you're a leftist who likes to watch videos on their screen, I encourage you to subscribe to Means TV, and they publish that game.
Oh, yeah, Means Interactive.
Yep. It's their first game they've published.
Cool.
Which I think is cool. The game's also, I think, an hour long or something like that. So if you're listening to us say this and you're like, oh yeah, I think I own that, like, just do it. Just fuck it, man. Just go for it. You know, just like, it's like an hour and a half long or something. Just do it.
I know it's relatively short, but there are some like execution specific needs to get through it.
Sure.
Is my understanding.
Well, we just beat a roguelike, so.
Yeah, no, I'm not concerned about us. I'm just saying there are some asks the game has.
Well, and yeah, I mean, we do have, Shadow of Mordor.
What about it?
No, never. Yeah, okay, whatever. Say the magic words, please.
If you want to reach us, you can find us on Twitter at @badplaystyle. If you want to send us emails, we're at badplaystyle@gmail.com. If you want to go to our website for some reason, you can go to shame.club or shame.business. Hey, we have a Steam curator page now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how useful it's going to be or how useful people find that, but I would encourage you to go into Steam and type Bad Playstyle into one of the search bars. Last time I tried it, we didn't show up, even though we're definitely on there. So, like, I don't know what the fuck's going on.
We didn't show up on the Steam client, but I did show up. We did find it on the Steam web page.
Yeah. So, like, I was trying to encourage a friend of mine to follow us on there so that, like, it wouldn't just be the three of us looking like dorks on our curator page. And it was
liking our own posts.
Yeah. And, like, we couldn't find it on his Steam client, and I had to have him navigate to my profile and find it. So, like, I don't know. Hopefully you can find our curator page or our fan page, because you have to make a fan page to have a curator page.
I found it clean on the website.
Okay,
so
cool.
If you search for it on the website, it should come up.
Yeah. I promise you that if you comment on our curator page or on our fan page, that I will send you a string of 26 emojis on Steam in response, because they just made all those emojis for sale.
26. That's very specific.
I don't know. I got so many fucking emojis now.
Yeah. No, you could have a very diverse 26 emojis.
Yo, you know how I was playing Dawn of War? So I got all those, like, Warhammer 40,000 emojis now. So, like, I have the symbol for the craft world of Eldar I used to play when I was in high school.
In my
emojis now, which is kind of dope.
Please say its name.
Oh, it's the Ulthway craft world. It's the craft world that flies too close to the Eye of Terror, and they take many casualties fighting the forces of chaos. So they wear black to mourn their dead.
If we can't say the names in the Nerd Zone, that is this podcast,
that's
when
true.
Can we say
this is a nerd safe space.
The symbol of that craft world represents the tears of Isha, the mother god of the Eldar, who shed tears for her dying.
Can I turn the podcast off? How do I turn the podcast off?
Suddenly he became a missionary.
Anyway, we hope to see you for Tonight We Riot. It's been fun. If you made it this far into the episode and you communicate with us in any way and we don't personally know you, we will send you a video game.
And listeners, have you heard the good news about the bloody-handed god of Kayla Menchikane, the god of war?
All right.
The other thing I want to point out is if y'all want to review our podcast anywhere, we would appreciate it.
Yeah. Do that.
Those algorithms love that.
Yeah.
We love
that
you.
That helps a lot. Yeah, and also contact us, send us pictures, send us whatevers.
Okay, goodbye.
We'll send you games.
Bye.
Goodbye.
A.K.A. Bucci Baby. You can hear this and more like it at soundcloud.com/BucciBay. That's BUCCIBAE. Stay fresh.